Welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. This is your host, Eric Hart.
And Ashley Flowers. It's October and it is Halloween time, so we thought we would start some scary, spooky stories of the theater and props.
Yes, there are so many ghost stories and superstitions and horrible events that have happened in and around theater and especially around props. So we thought we would kind of, you know, talk about some of the ones we've heard.
So let's start off with the most known typical superstition in the theater world, and that's saying Macbeth in the theater.
Right. There are some people who are very strict about this, and absolutely.
I am one of them.
You're one of them?
I am one of them. I am the worst. I am the worst when it comes to superstitions. I know they're not real. I know it's fake. But, you know, just in case, I just don't say it. You'll never see me walk under a ladder ever in life. Mm-hmm.
So
you won't hear me say Macbeth.
Is it just in a theater or anywhere?
With ladders?
With, say, Macbeth.
Oh, with Macbeth, it's only in a theater.
Okay, okay.
Also, I mean, obviously I'm saying it right now,
right.
So.
Yeah. We'll see if we ladders, do any more episodes after this.
Right. I mean, the Scottish play.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, you say the Scottish play, or you say, some people say Macbeth. Anything to get out of saying Macbeth.
Right.
So there's a lot of superstitions, a lot of legends about why the show is especially cursed. But the prop reason that I've heard is that the prop master in the original Shakespearean production stole the cauldron from an actual witch's coven. And so the witches put a curse on all subsequent productions of Macbeth. So that's interesting. I don't know if there's any way to verify that. You know, I don't even know if Shakespeare had a prop master or who that position would have been, or if it was just the actors sort of gathering their own props or what.
From my understanding of studying Shakespeare, it was the actors that they provided everything. They provided their costumes, they provided their props and everything. They didn't have a set designer, they didn't have a props master, they didn't have a costume designer,
right.
You know.
And I think
that is my understanding. So
yeah, they had sort of a bare bones crew. The tiring man is mentioned in a few shows, and he's the one who would set the stools up on stage and bring them their props and sort of help them with costume changes backstage, that sort of thing. But as far as having like a crew, I don't know. I mean, there were definitely bigger kind of revels and carnivals where they had professional tradespeople building items, but I think
let's blame it on the actors.
Yeah,
for this one.
So maybe an actor that went out and stole it from some witches or something like that. You know,
like you do. But there is a remedy to get rid of this curse.
Oh,
if you
really?
Do say it. There is. So I've never made people do this before ever. Okay. So you have to step outside of the theater and turn around three times, spit, and say the foulest word he or she can think of, and then wait for permission to re-enter the theater. That is supposedly how you, you know, fix the curse. Of course, there's like little different versions of it. Of you have to turn around three times on your left side or your right side, you know, silly
right,
stuff like
yeah.
that. But I've never made somebody do that, for the record.
Well, that's good.
I have not.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm like, okay, you said it, so the curse is on you and not me.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a little side eye, though.
Right.
You know, a little judgment. But
so I also heard a less innocuous reason why, and a prop-related reason why this show is cursed. Apparently, it features a lot more swordplay than any other Shakespeare show. So it's just statistically more likely that you'll have a sword-related accident while you're doing it. But of course, you know, this makes me think like, all right, is the show cursed or is saying the name cursed? Because is it accidents that happen while you're doing Macbeth, or is it accidents that happen on other shows when you say Macbeth? Who's tracking that? Mm. What are the statistics on that?
Ooh, that would be interesting to know.
Right. How many shows?
See, I've always been told, well, actually, you know, I've been told both. I've been told, you know, you can't say Macbeth no matter what.
Right.
It brings bad luck to the show that you're doing.
Yeah.
But I've also know a lot of theaters, or I shouldn't say theaters, I should say directors or such, that don't want to do Macbeth because just doing Macbeth itself
right.
is bad luck.
Yeah.
Like there's always something that happens. That would be interesting to know. Is there some statistics there of which is worse.
Right. Yeah, so sticking with Shakespeare, Hamlet is a show that's not necessarily cursed, but it does feature one of the most iconic scary Halloween props, and that's the skull of Yorick. And there are some pretty grim tales surrounding various skulls that have been used throughout the past.
Uh-huh.
I think one of the recent ones, yeah.
is the most recent one that was in 2009. What, eight years ago. Mm-hmm. David Tennant at the West End in England used a real skull. And a lot of people thought it, you know, was a fake skull. But after the run, the Royal Shakespeare Company actually came forth and said, oh, no, that was a real skull. You know, somebody donated it to us. We thought we'd use it.
Yeah, they donated it with in their will stating that it can be used for Hamlet. And I think I remember at the time, it started out as a rumor that David Tennant used a real skull in one of the performances of Hamlet. And then they sort of denied it and they were playing real coy, like, no, obviously we weren't using a real skull or whatever. And then after the show closed, it sort of came out like, yes, actually we did use a real skull for at least one of the performances. So whether that makes his acting easier or more believable, I don't know.
Well, and that was one of the arguments, was David Tennant saying, well, it helped me perform. It was more real. It was authentic. At the same time, it is real. It is authentic skull.
Yeah, they're...
But apparently it was of a Polish-born musician who later lived in England. I am going to butcher this name tremendously. Tchaikovsky? We're going to pretend that's how you pronounce the guy's name.
It's spelled very much like Tchaikovsky, but it's not Tchaikovsky of Nutcracker Suite. It's a different musician.
Exactly.
I remember that confused me when the news story was coming out. Like, Tchaikovsky skull? He was English? Wait a minute.
Like, what?
But no, totally different person. But yeah, there. At least he knew about it. There's a couple stories of... performers who didn't know about it. So, you know, back in the mid 19th century, you had these touring actors doing shows, but they would basically show up to a theater and all the props would basically be pulled from stock. They would give the list ahead of time and they would sort of show up on stage and use whatever they needed to use. You know, it was much different from today, where it's like you have these exacting standards and you need things approved ahead of time. So, you know, an actor like MacReady, who would do Hamlet across the United States, would show up and do a show and be literally holding the skull, doing the monologue in front of the audience and kind of thinking to himself, like, this feels kind of real. And then finding out later that the props master gave him really a real skull. So there's a couple stories of that happening, but...
That's just insane. I mean, I don't know. I can understand, you know, back way, way back then, they're like, okay, whatever. But in today, I mean, 2009, like I said, is so recent, how we thought that, you know, it's cool, you know, no big deal. Nobody's going to mind that. But like you said, at least the actor knew.
Right.
I would freak out if someone gave me a real skull to perform with. I said, no, I'm going to pretend it's a real skull and you're going to get me a plastic one. I don't want all that voodoo on me. Yeah,
give me some paper mache, like, something.
I feel like that's more bad luck than saying Macbeth.
Yeah.
However, I do have to say, though, that would kind of be cool to, like, donate my skull after I die to a theater.
Right.
And be like, here, just use my skull for Hamlet.
I mean, that's the ultimate way for a props person to live on, is to actually become a prop for future generations.
Use me as a prop. Here you go. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
And horrific. I love it.
Yeah. There's another story I dug up. So this is, again, Edmund Kean, who performed Shakespeare back in the late 19th century. He actually exhumed the body of George Frederick Cook, who was another famous Shakespeare actor who performed Hamlet back in the late 18th century. He died in 1812. And so his body sort of lay there. And after 10 years, Edmund Kean had it exhumed and used the skull in performances of Hamlet. What anybody would think of that now? I don't know what they thought of that then. It seems fairly gruesome, fairly, like...
That's insane.
Like, there was no consent in that.
Yeah, that was like, like,
I don't know what I would think about that.
Well, also, I'm curious of, like, did the props master have to do something to the skull?
Right.
You know, did he have to clean the skull? Because the one that David Tennant used, Andre Travosky, or however we want to pronounce his last name, died in 1982. And he, you know, he donated his skull to the Royal Shakespeare Company in hopes that it would be used on stage. So fast forward to 2009, it's finally on stage. I mean, did they have to clean it? Did they have to put like a polycrylic coating on it? You know, yeah. Like, or did they just say, oh no, it's fine, it's good. You know, if it starts, you know, chipping away and a tooth falls out, don't worry about it. You know, like, also, could you imagine if you broke that? If you were the actor that broke that prop?
Right.
Oh, that would, now that's a story.
Yeah. Flash forward a couple years. It's not a cursed prop, but it's definitely an item with a spooky history. So Molière's chair that he used, Molière, who did Tartuffe and The Miser. So he also did, he wrote and performed in The Imaginary Invalid. And so his, at the end of that show, the character he plays dies on stage, sitting in a chair. And so he actually died immediately after performing Imaginary Invalid. And for a long time, there was kind of this like urban legend that he died during the performance and sat there in this chair as the audience cheered around him just being dead. And so it came out, you know, when you actually explore history, you find out he sort of got sick during it and he died. It was either a few hours or maybe even a few days after this performance. But the legend persisted that he died in this chair on stage while during his character's death. So super realistic acting going on there. So this chair that he died in is actually still on display in France. You could go see it. I think it's at the French, either National Theater Museum or something like that. I'd have to look it up. So you could see this chair that he actually died in.
That would actually be kind of cool.
Right.
I would be that weirdo that's like, let's go see the chair that Molière died in.
And you know, there's not that many props that still exist from that. I mean, this is the early or the mid 1600s. So, and it's an upholstered chair, so it's got some fabric on it and things like that. I think it might actually be ostrich leather.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, we don't have any existing props from Shakespeare's time. There's a couple relics that they've, like, dug up, but nothing that could be, like, definitively matched with, you know, this is an object that Shakespeare used in one of his shows. We just don't have that. But we do with Molière. Mm-hmm.
So real quick to go back on Macbeth, there are some other superstitions that I actually just recently learned about. That the witches in Macbeth, there's this, I guess you could say, ghost story, that Shakespeare actually stole real spells from witches. Mm-hmm. And so the incantations that the witches are saying in actual Macbeth or real black magic. And I think that kind of goes back to the of doing the play itself is kind of voodoo.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons that people think that, because, oh, we're using real black magic here that Shakespeare stole.
And I think I've actually heard there's some actors who will only do the witch's lines during a performance. They'll kind of like stop and start during rehearsal. They won't go through the entire spell. Just in case.
I've heard that as well. Yeah, just in case. You know,
just in case.
See, that's like for me. I'm superstitious. Just in case.
Yeah.
You know, you never know. Just in case.
Right.
And there's also that. Now, this one I don't think is true, but I like to pretend it's true because it's funny. Well, not funny. That's not the right word. Interesting. But apparently, President Lincoln read Macbeth the night before he was assassinated. I don't know if that's true or not, but it would be interesting if that
that's
were true.
That's a pretty powerful curse there.
Right? Like, ooh. Mm-hmm. Now, there's also another superstition in the theater that's not necessarily prop related, but I've always found interesting, is the ghost light.
Mm-hmm.
So as everybody knows, anytime you leave the theater at night, someone rolls the ghost light in the middle of the stage and has it on until somebody comes in the next day. And the practical reason for that is so nobody wanders on stage and falls off the front of the stage and breaks their neck.
Right.
That makes sense. But apparently, the reason it got started was because a lot of people believe that theaters are inhabited by ghosts of older actors or people who used to work in the building. So the ghost light was supposed to keep the ghosts away so that they don't get mischievous when everybody is gone.
Right, yeah. And also along with that, I don't find too many people still practicing this, but for a long time, peacock feathers on stage were thought to be cursed. So any sort of costume or prop needed to avoid having real peacock feathers on them, or even peacock feather motifs. It had something to do with because it looks like an eye and it's an evil eye or that sort of thing. So you occasionally find a prop master who will sort of refuse to use peacock feathers as a set dressing or as a part of a prop or something like that. They'll kind of use something fake or substitute something, but actual peacock feathers are to be avoided at all costs.
Yeah, because I think the peacock feather is also representative of like the evil eye,
yeah,
is what my understanding of it. But I don't know, that's, I haven't heard as much on that one as the other ones, which is interesting.
Another one I've kind of run into every once in a while. I've seen before that you never light three things with a single match. So this is vaguely prop related. So if you have like three candles on stage, and you light a match, you light two of the candles and you blow out the match and you light the third with a separate match. Same thing with cigarettes. Mm-hmm. If you have three people smoking a cigarette, you can light two of them with a match, but then you have to use a second match to light the third cigarette. And there's also, there's an actual theatrical superstition, which is never light a trio of candles.
Oh, interesting.
So again, it's like you have two candles or you have four candles, but never have three candles that are lit on stage. So this, you know, it might come from the fact that lighting any candles on stage is a bad idea. And so any show that has open flame is just that much more likely to have an accident, a fire-related accident. But it also comes down to, three is such a superstitious number in Western theater and Western society. Mm-hmm. So anytime you do something in threes, you're kind of, I think it's like defying the Holy Trinity. And so you have to either break it up or use a different number.
Yeah. Which is interesting because Shakespeare always did things in threes. Mm-hmm.
That's maybe that's why his shows are so cursed.
Yeah, exactly. That's why. And some more superstition specifically for props is, and we kind of still do this today for other reasons, but using real money, real jewelry, and Bibles on stage used to be really, really like taboo. Because one, money and jewelry could be stolen. It was considered too luxurious for the theater. Mm-hmm. You should be more scrappy. And today I think it's kind of the same thing. It's like, well, I don't want real money to be stolen or real jewelry to be stolen. Yeah. But back then it was very, very taboo to do. Now Bibles, I've used Bibles on stage before many, many of times. I've never, not used a real Bible or like made a fake Bible or something like that. Mm-hmm. But there are, I don't know if today, I know way back when, using a real Bible on stage was, sacrilegious and, taboo to do. So that was very not heard of.
And what's interesting for props people is every once in a while you have to do a show that has maybe sort of religious paraphernalia. And there are definitely suppliers out there who supply things to churches and things like that. But some of them are very, very strict. And if they kind of find out that it's for theatrical purposes, they'll refuse to sell it to you. You're looking for like a statue of the Virgin Mary and you're trying to buy it from a supplier of Mary statuaries. And they find out it's going on stage. That's sacrilegious enough. I mean, the theater and the church have long been in opposition to each other and apparently still are in some circumstances. Yeah. So,
it's true. It's very true. And I've been lucky where I haven't had to do many shows that called for a lot of religious items. I've been very, very lucky in the fact that I've never had to do a show that has to call for a Ouija board, because that if I ever did a show that called for a Ouija board, I would say, I'm sorry, I can't do your show. Once again, my superstition kicking in. That is the one. I won't even be in a room that has a Ouija board. I refuse. And so if I ever had to do a show like that, I think I'd be like, you know, I think I'm sick. Right. And I'm going to be sick until closing night, so...
Or you just make your own, but so you could be sure that it's not made in a way to actually work. I don't know.
I don't know. I think I'd still be freaked out. With my luck, I'd, like, call the demons down here. Would be my luck.
Oh, I made it too powerful.
Oh, whoops. I feel like there's somebody listening who's writing down all of these things, like the bad superstitions, and, like, planning. Okay, how do I get all of these into one show?
Stick them all in and watch the chaos that ensues.
And just see what happens.
Yeah.
So if you are doing that, whoever is doing that, let us know how that works out and don't invite me. So another event, I should say, that has happened recently that isn't really a superstition or bad luck. It just ended badly with, I guess you could say, a scary prop. Was with Sweeney Todd. And in 2016 in New Zealand, there was a high school, I believe, doing Sweeney Todd. And during one of the performances, two teenage boys actually had their throats nicked a bit from the razors that they use in Sweeney Todd. And I'm sure we all know what scene I'm talking about when they're shaving and all that jazz and the murder scene. But the thing that I didn't know until recently is that the audience did not know that a real accident had happened on stage until after the show. They continued the show until the end and then sent them to the hospital.
Yeah, and that's scary in just a safety kind of way.
Yeah, and it's interesting because after doing some research on it, the props master, the dean of the school, everybody swears that they had that knife wrapped in cellophane. They did all sorts of blunting techniques to make sure it was not sharp. It went through several health and safety checks. They rehearsed the scene multiple times. And many of the people a part of this production had stated, we have no idea how the actor accomplished this. And luckily, the teenage boys are fine, and they were released from the hospital shortly after. But it just proves to show that you can do all of your health and safety checks as many times, and you can make sure it's the dullest knife in the whole entire world. I guess there's always a way that something can go wrong, and you have to make sure that you're talking with the actors and they're not getting wrapped in the moment, because, I mean, obviously I wasn't there and I don't know the whole entire story. You know, there's always multiple sides to one story. But in my initial thought would be that the actor got too into it, too in their head, too into the character, and just had that knife way too tight and way too forceful on the other actor's neck. Because from looking at everything that everybody's saying, I don't know how else they could have nicked each other if it was as dull as they're saying and wrapped and right. everything.
To me, it sounds very suspect. Like, of course, they're going to say that, yeah, we were doing all this health and safety stuff, but you know, high schools are kind of notorious for using props that are more dangerous than they should. And just the fact that they're talking about it being like cellophane, and makes it sound like they, you know, taped it up. Maybe they blunted the tip and then they taped the edge, but the tape maybe wears off or something like that. Because honestly, if it was properly dulled, then there's no way it would cut through skin or anything like that.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, how would that? Because I've dulled knives multiple times, and I take those knives when they're dulled, I take them against my own skin. And I like forcefully, you know, obviously not cut myself, but, you know, put it against my skin in any, every single direction and not even a little scratch. So it does beg the question of, was it truly dulled properly? And maybe the actor, I don't know, put too much force. It's very strange. It's a very strange. And I know when this happened, many articles was going around in the prop community of like, how did this happen? You know, this is preventable.
But yeah, Sweeney Todd is like one of the few modern shows that has, that I would say is sort of scary. There's not many scary plays out there. I know a lot of people around Halloween do Dracula. So there's, you know, there's some iconic props from that. The wooden stake. I think there's a blood transfusion device. But it's really rare to go to a play expecting to be scared. There's certainly thrillers, you know, Wait Until Dark, yeah. Dial M for Murder, things like that. I think Woman in Black, which I haven't seen, but my wife did, is one of the few sort of plays designed to be scary and make you jump. You know, it's they made a movie out of it a few years ago with Daniel Radcliffe. It's about, you know, a woman's haunting a place that he needs to foreclose on or something like that. So the play itself
I don't like scary movies.
The play itself has a lot of sort of ghost effects, and one of the most iconic ones is this real tense moment, and there's a rocking chair on stage, and all of a sudden it starts rocking by itself. So it's a great sort of example of a prop designed to scare an audience in the modern era. Mm-hmm. But really, like there aren't too many other ones. You know, all the other sort of ghost stories in theater, like Blithe Spirit, these are more like comedic. The ghost effects are kind of more like funny and surprising as opposed to being designed to scare us.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. But then you go into film and it's obviously
right. Yeah, there's a ton of film props that are just by themselves are scary. And I think we're going to devote a future episode to that.
Yes, definitely. Now, another, I wouldn't necessarily say this is a scary prop. This kind of goes into the category of what you were just saying of it's more of a funny, scary prop, which would be the Audrey 2 plant from Little Shop of Horrors. And we did that in college. I don't remember, I think my junior year at Ball State University, and you had, you know, the baby Audrey plant that was more of a hand puppet, and then it grew throughout the show, and you eventually had a ginormous 4 foot, 5 foot tall plant that the mouth would open and you would slide down into, and, you know, it'd eat you and stuff like that.
And did you actually construct it for your production?
I did not. That was actually right before I got into props. I think that was one of the turning points for me watching how it worked, because I was on crew for that. And it was so fascinating watching them manipulate this puppet, and kind of got my wheels a turning a little bit more towards the prop world.
Yeah, I know a lot of places usually rent out puppets. So there's a couple like builds out there that kind of make their way across the country. Every once in a while, somebody will attempt it. You know, the big challenge there is puppeting is similar but slightly different from props. And so if you don't understand how to weight and balance your puppets, you can easily make this giant puppet that is impossible to maneuver by the crew. But I know I'm not working at a theater where we would ever do Little Shop of Horrors, but it's kind of on my bucket list of props that I want to eventually build someday. I want to do my own kind of Audrey 2. It's definitely one of those iconic semi-scary props for the theater world.
Yeah, see, I would love to do that show, but make it more gruesome. You know, make it as realistically gross as you can with that plant, because the puppet that we used, you know, it's not meant to look, you know, disgusting and like gnarly and stuff. You know, it is supposed to be more comedic, but I would love to.
Yeah, and it was originally a very straight sort of thriller movie back in the 1930s, starring a very, very young Jack Nicholson. And then, you know, the musical was kind of played up in a sort of camp way. But I remember as a kid, I mean, some of that stuff, it was definitely haunting and scary for a children. You know, the idea of a plant eating people, about that is, I always remembered thinking like, where do they go? They come out of there eventually, right? It's like, no, they were eaten. So I can imagine even a theatrical production for younger people could be pretty scary, even with all the camps surrounding that show.
Yeah. It's funny. I hate scary movies. I hate being scared. I love Halloween. Doesn't make sense. I refuse to go through haunted houses, but I love making people scared. You know, I love making the gruesome props and like the disgusting, crazy stuff. I love working in haunted houses and scaring people and making them cry. It's very horrible. But I do not like to be on the other end of
it. So you would make something, but you would not watch the show that it was in.
I mean, I think if I was a part of, you know, part of the production team, and I was watching the whole thing, you know, during tech, it probably wouldn't be as bad, because I'm like, I know how they're doing that. But prop and sent it out to a theater. Oh, and
yeah.
Because I wasn't a part of the whole thing, you know what I mean? But I'll make you all the gory stuff, no problem.
I'll make the fake blood. If I look at real blood, I will pass out. But I will make you as much fake blood as you want.
Exactly. I got you there. Thank you for listening in to some of our little spooky stories for Halloween with props. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at Silk Mache and email us with questions or any ideas that you would like to hear for future episodes at propspodcast@gmail.com.
And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. And check out our Patreon. If you want to support us monetarily, go to patreon.com/silkmache. You could also find that link at our website at silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com.
This has been another episode of Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts with your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. We'll see you next week.
Bye.